This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Last week, we discussed a concept and a story that came up in the story of Dhul Qarnayn about how building power as a community requires active participation. It's not a spectator sport. And in the story of Dhul Qarnayn, the last group of people that he met, you know, they had this sort of attitude like, Dhul Qarnayn, you just do everything for us and we'll just sit here and watch. And how Dhul Qarnayn actually educated them and showed them that they needed to participate as well. No, you're going to bring the hadid, you're going to bring the iron, you're going to do some work. Well, there's a flip side of that as well. Right, we talked before about the perspective of the people and how the people need to be prepared to sacrifice and the people need to be prepared to get involved. But there's also a dimension to it that we can learn from Dhul Qarnayn himself. Recall that they offered to pay him money. They're basically like, we'll pay whatever it takes. Just let us know. We'll send a check in the mail. It'll be over. Forget about it. And he was basically like, that's not how this works. Right? Now, there's a very important dimension to this that is really super important for leadership, but is also applicable to everybody else as well. And that's the concept of not being bought and not being able to be bought. That when you do things, it is on principle. It's not because you're getting a favor. It's not because someone is nice to you. It's not because you're looking for a position or you're looking for a photo op. Now this principle is illustrated again in the Quran later in Surah An-Naml when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tells us the story of Saba, the queen of Sheba, Bilqis, and Sulaiman alayhi salam. Bilqis is wondering what to do with this guy Sulaiman. He sends this letter, it's a very strange letter, and she turns to her sort of her inner circle of advisors. And she asks, what do you think? And they tell her, look, I mean, we're ready to throw down. If you want to fight, we can fight. We're prepared for that. But whatever you want to do. And as a side benefit, it's a very, very interesting part in the Quran where she makes a remark about sort of a lesson from history. It's like anytime two sides or two groups go to war, usually the honorable people or the dignitaries of one side or the other, if not both, become humiliated. And so it's almost like a brain drain that goes on. And Allah, in one of the tafsir, in one of the interpretations of it, وَكَذَلِكَ يَفْعَلُونَ is almost as if Allah is saying, and yes, this is true. Now this is an important principle, because even though she's a kafira and a mushrika, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala didn't say, you know, shut up, you filthy mushrika. The thing that she said was correct. And so, it deserves to be recognized as correct. We don't necessarily dismiss people due to their identity or what they are if the thing that they said is true. Or, as Malcolm X used to say, we're for the truth no matter who says it, right? Or where it comes from. That's actually what makes us unique as Muslims. So anyway, so she has this attitude. She comes up with an idea. She doesn't want to go to war. The idea is, let's send them a gift, hoping that the gift is going to ease things up. Now, it's very, very interesting to see Suleiman's reaction to this. You or I, if we were given a gift, we'd feel some sort of way. We'd be kind of warm, fuzzy inside. But Suleiman is after something completely different. Remember his purpose when he sent his letter to Bilqis in the first place. He's doing dawah. He doesn't care about the trappings. He doesn't care about the White House iftars or the selfies in front of Congress or what have you. He wants to do the work of Allah, Azza wa Jalla. And so he almost even takes offense that he would be given a gift in the first place. And the language that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala uses is very, very interesting, right? Is that he says, فَلَمَّا جَاءَ سُلَيْمَانَ قَالَ أَتُمِدُّونَنِي بِمَالٍ فَمَا آتَانِيَ اللَّهُ خَيْرٌ مِمَّا آتَاكُمْ بَلْ أَنْتُمْ بِهَدِيَّتِكُمْ تَفْرَحُونَ. No, you guys are pleased by gifts. Very, very interesting wording. You guys are happy when you receive a gift. You guys are happy when you get a photo op. You guys are happy when the administration throws you a bone or crumbs from the dinner table. That's not what I'm after, Suleiman says. I'm after something much, much more. I'm doing da'wah. I care about the truth. I care about the spread of the truth. And his ultimate mission, as we find out, is that he is trying to get Bilqis to accept Islam. And every one of his tactics and decisions and part of his strategy is all comprehensively folded into that goal. He doesn't divert to the left or to the right. Everything he does is focused on the goal, which is trying to get this person guidance. And what's the best rizq that you could possibly receive except for guidance? So that's our first lesson for tonight. And we'll only keep it to two because, you know, we need to get back to salah. The first is that as Muslims, we need to be people like Suleiman that we can't be bought. We don't have a price. We don't have a price. If somebody invites us, we'd rather them come to us than us have to go to them. You understand? If you're not politically savvy, you don't realize how these things work. Or as we say in colloquial English, there's no such thing as a free lunch. If you get an invite somewhere, there's usually some string attached to it. If you're given a gift from somebody that doesn't really have any business giving you a gift in the first place, guess what? There's probably a string attached to it. Probably they're going to be calling on you at some point or expecting you at some point to do something for them, quid pro quo. This is unfortunately how power and politics works. So power is actually in istighna', a degree of self-sufficiency and self-reliance that, no thanks, I don't need any of that. No thanks, I'm not going to accept your invitation to dinner or a meeting or an iftar or whatever when you're slaughtering my people. And you can continue to apply that lesson as you will. The second lesson for tonight, we take from the story of Musa, and in these sort of suwar, shuara, and naml, and this sort of part of the Quran that I'm focusing on tonight, we have the story of Musa told over and over again. And it's always fascinating, and one thing that I try to get I know a couple of the young folks here, if they're here, study with me in Legacy, study Tafsir, is to always pay attention when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tells the same story across different chapters, because he tells it slightly different in each way. Maybe he'll start earlier or he'll start later in the chronology of the story. Maybe he'll emphasize certain things here and certain things there. And it's all part of Allah's point, what he's trying to drive at and what he's trying to get to with the story that he's telling. Now, when it comes to the story of Musa, I'm going to focus in on Surah Ash-Shu'ara because it's fascinating to me. And it's a very empowering message. And we'll wrap up the series with this, and hopefully you'll feel a little bit empowered. That when Musa is given the duty to bring the message back to Fir'aun, in the beginning of Surah Ash-Shu'ara, his reaction is basically like, are you serious? Like, how am I supposed to be able to do this thing? It doesn't seem like it's possible. He has a whole long list of sort of reasons why it can't work, right? And he says, "Qala Rabbi inni akhafu an yukadhibun." I'm afraid they're gonna give me the lie, and that I'm not gonna be able to say it. And I've got this thing, you know, with my speech, and make my brother along with me. He keeps on going through reasons why it can't work. Now, what's fascinating about the story arc and the sort of character development of Musa, and I know our sheikh is a literary major, so you can appreciate, I'm sure he can tell you much more about the character development, is that by the time Musa is given the signs and he confronts Fir'aun and he has the showdown with the magicians and he sees everything happen in front of his eyes, by the time they get down to the Red Sea, he's a completely changed person. He's a completely changed person. And the language, he says that his people are still not sure what's going to happen. فَلَمَّا تَرَى الْجَمَعَانِ قَالَ أَصْحَابُ مُوسَى. What did the people, Musa's people, say when they get down to the sea? إِنَّا لَمُدْرَكُونَ. It's like, we're done for. They got us. It's curtains. There's no way out. Look at the Musa now. Look at how far he's come. قَالَ كَلَّا إِنَّ مَعِيَ رَبِّي سَيَهْدِينَ. He says, no. I know that my Lord is going to guide us. And this is the lesson that Musa learned, is that in the old Musa thought that he had to do it himself, that he had to yatawakkal ala nafsi, that he had just to rely on his ability. And if you or I rely on our own ability, we're going to fail every single time. And what the mature Musa had realized was that he's not relying on himself, he's relying on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is capable of anything, which is why I say to anyone who will listen, do not worry if you're 1% of the population, or 0.1%, or 0.00001%, is that if Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is with you, He is the one who's going to do it. What's required of you is the intention and the purity of cause and discipline and pleasing Allah and obedience to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and Allah can do what He wills. Barakallahu feekum, Allahu ta'ala a'lam. Subhanakallahu wa hamdaka, ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta, astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.